Now we're ready.
And the Christmas hymns, of course, they were the same ones over and over. Every year they were the same ones. And when I started singing the choir that was at Hondo, and there were several people from Casta that were living there then, and also from Dehenny's. And we got to where we didn't have an organist, you know. They just played whoever got there, you know, would kind of pick out. They all played the piano, but they couldn't. The organ is an entirely different tone, different count. And so we got to where we'd harmonize those Christmas hymns. And there was a Methodist man lived across the street, Mr. Short. And he says, "Lord, come over to my house. Those people are practicing Christmas songs."
Love to listen to it.
Uh-huh. And well, it was real pretty because there was a Mr. Cook, Mr. Nick Cook. He had a lovely bass voice. And then the Mrs. John Finger and I sang tenor. And I was just 10, 11 years old. And then the others sang soprano, and Mrs. John Meckler, and my sister Mary, and no, Mary Reen was soprano. Well, anyway, we were divided up like that, and we really had a beautiful choir. And when the bishop came out there to dedicate the church, of course, we had that extra mass. Of course, then Mary Kempf had gone to San Antonio. She used to go, well, she was educated at Our Lady of the Lake. And then she went back and tried to learn the organ. Well, she was doing real well, but once in a while she'd get off to that pounding. And one day I said, "Mary, do you know how to count to play an organ?" And she said, "Count, it's just like piano." I said, "No, it isn't. You'd say one and, two and, three and you hold that key down till you finish saying the and."
That's right.
So the it was quite funny because I was just a snot liquor kid and she was a young lady.
So the adult choir, the choir, the church choir played a great part.
Oh, in yes.
Many of the ceremonies.
Mm-hmm. In all of the ceremonies.
You mentioned that on Christmas Eve you helped decorate. Mm-hmm. Now, at what age were you allowed to do this? Was this always?
No, I guess it was always, because at first, I remember at first, we could just pick up the little tinsels and hand them mm-hmm. to somebody, you know, to put into the tree. So I must have been real little. I must have been, oh, maybe seven, maybe six or 7 years old.
So it wasn't always necessarily customary that Santa Claus brought
no,
the tree.
Uh-uh, Santa Claus, not at our house. Yes. It could have been somewhere else, mm-hmm. but it wasn't at our house. We decorated the tree, and then Santa Claus came and brought the presents.
And did you receive your gifts on Christmas Eve?
Mm-hmm. Christmas morning.
Christmas morning. Mm-hmm. And you said your family usually went to midnight mass.
Yes, all the grown ones. Even, two of the boys would go, but then the youngest boy and Mary and I didn't get to go because we didn't get to go out that late at night. Well, I'd have probably gone to sleep and they'd have to carry me home. They wouldn't have had much trouble with me, but Mary was a fat somebody.
I know that Lent was much different, say,
oh, yes.
60 years ago, for instance.
Mm.
Tell me some of the differences that you can think of.
Well, you ate meat only once a day, but on Wednesday and Friday you did not eat meat. Those were days of fast and really fast and abstinence, but most of the people, you know, were farmers around here, and so the family ate with them. But there was no meat allowed on those 2 days. And for breakfast, it was just a light breakfast, like maybe a cup of chocolate. Would have had more milk than chocolate. Well, it was cocoa. And toast, or those who worked in the field would have one egg, but no meat, because meat was only once a day. And the housewives, of course, their work wasn't quite as strenuous, so they could easily do it. But the afternoon lunches were out, The 3 o'clock lunches were out.
And this was for 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm. That was a form of penance, repentance, rather.
Okay. So then, what about Holy Week? That
was really something. I'm telling you, we kids' knees would nearly be worn out. We put one knee down and the rest one. You wouldn't believe it.
In other words, we don't know what church is really is like.
No, you don't. No, you don't. When I see these people come to church and see somebody over there and they wave at this and over here, I feel like getting up. And then another thing about making the sign of the cross. Here lately, I have noticed priests come in, dip their fingers, and they look like they're chasing gnats. That's what it looks like to me. And when the little girl had to go over here to take her examination for communion, well, there was a little boy in there, and they were both so darn scared they didn't know what to do. That little girl could hardly talk. And then Father said something about making the sign of the cross, and of course, the little boy, he got through awful quick. And I looked at the little girl, and I said, make the sign of the cross like you're supposed to. And of course, she bit her lips, and I said, I just did it like this, and then she knew what I meant. The people will come in and they'll make the sign of the cross with either one finger or two fingers. You're supposed to make the sign of the cross with three fingers with your thumb turned to the inside. And finally she made it, and then Father says, oh, who taught you how to make that? It's Grandma. See, their mother was baptized a Catholic, but her grandfather wouldn't let her grandmother send her to school or to religion. He was bad against it. He wouldn't let his wife go to church or anything. So this girl's, when she moved to Texas, her godfather lived in the valley, and she went down there and she told him that she was going with a Catholic boy and she didn't know how to go about it. And so he says, you stay down here, and we have a very good priest here, and I'll explain to him what happened to you. So she had instructions down there for about 4 weeks. Well, that's just like a drop of water in a bucket. Mm. And then when she came, she lived in San Antonio, and that priest helped her some, and then he gave her some books, and he told her to read and to study up on that. And she did real well in it.
What was the ceremony on Good Friday?
Well, it was the Stations of the Cross, and then there was the Adoration of the Cross. When like at the station where they took the body of Christ down, well, that crucifix was taken down and the purple veil was taken away from it and laid at the steps where you went into the sanctuary. Mm-hmm. And the people went up there and they venerated the cross of the body of Christ there, and that was what that was. But it was really impressive. Once you have seen it, you'll never forget it.
Did they kiss the wounds?
Yes, they kissed the wounds. And the children, it took too long, you know, for all the school children. So we kissed the side of the wound, the heart wound.
Mm-hmm. And how long did this ceremony take?
It was all afternoon. Because, see, there was the Stations of the Cross, and there was ceremony, there were readings. And then there were songs that they sang, you know, I never could get into the tune of it because it was just a grind, grind, grind with all in one tone.
Don't you think it was sort of a monotone and
yes.
In the form of mourning?
Yes. And then they had the stations, and of course between each station they sang the stanza that went with that.
Mm-hmm. Then Good Friday was really a day of mourning.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now when did Lent end?
Lent at Saturday at dinner time. Saturday at noon. Because in the morning, it was really Saturday is the Mass of the Resurrection. And then they distribute Holy Communion. And then the Sunday Mass is a Mass of celebration.
Did you take Holy Communion on Good Friday?
No, they didn't. The tabernacle was unlocked, and the hosts were moved over into the side altar with Our Lady, Blessed Virgin, and the door was locked, and it was not opened until the next Mass, when the chalice was moved back to the main altar.
This was the only day of the year that you did not take Holy Communion?
Holy Communion, no ma'am.
What about Easter Sunday? What was that special day?
Well, the specialty of it was the chanting of the prayers, and of course we always had several visiting priests, you know, and in those days we had the asparagus man, and Father came down with the holy water.
Blessed?
Yeah.
Blessed the people?
And he blessed the people. And all these other priests followed in too, and of course they gave the blessing by the hand, with a hand. And it was an uplift. It was a glorious mass, glorious time. And of course the choir was singing, and it was really something. It's not like now. Well, they have 900 masses. They have one of them over here once in a while. They have one at 10 o'clock, and then the next time it's 5 minutes after 12. Then it's at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, the bells ring. I wonder what in the world is going on.
You used to know, huh? When the bells rang, you knew.
Yes, I knew what it was. We had a Mass at 8 o'clock and the High Mass at 10 o'clock. In the school term, all during school year, is the Mass was at 8 o'clock. If you didn't make it, well, that was just too bad.
Did the Lenten regulations pose a hardship on you in any way, the strictness of them?
Mm-mm. No, there weren't any dances, or you didn't play cards or anything like that. Of course, I never played cards, so it didn't bother me a bit.
When do you think the traditions changed as far as the fasting and the eating of meat?
I really don't know. I lost track of it because I was still fasting a long time. I wouldn't go to communion unless I could go to confession and then go to communion. I wouldn't go if I couldn't do it. But now they have 30-minute communion confession on a Saturday afternoon. It's 30 minutes, and I don't know how in the world those people all get in there. Because quick as the tabernacle's open, here they go. Like a bunch of cattle. I had a fight with my little girl. You know, they have a way of saying they go up to receive bread. That is a host, and it's consecrated. It's no bread. It's not a bread traditional, because it's an unleavened yeast, you know, unleavened bread. And it's a host, and it's blessed. It's a sacred thing. And she said, oh, we went up there and got some bread. I got on her, and she nearly cried. And she says, Daddy, every time I say something, Grandma fights with me. He says, well, say it right. She's right. Say it the way she tells you.
I know that there was some Lutheran, there was a Lutheran religion in Castroville also.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how did the Lutheran people and the Catholic people get along? Was there any?
Fine. There was no friction. No, because we had a hotel when I was a little girl, and the priest here didn't have a priest for some reason. I don't know whether he was off on vacation or what, but anyway, the priest from the convent came over to our house for dinner. He came every day, and the Lutheran minister came over there, and they ate dinner at the same table. And so many people would say, don't they ever quarrel? And said, well, no, why would they want to quarrel? You know, the Lutheran, the Lutheran is the first church that was established after the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. Because Martin Luther was a Catholic priest, but they didn't elect him the Pope, so he started his own. But there are prayers. Now, I'll tell you something else. Episcopalian people have everything like the Catholics except confession. Mm-hmm. They don't go to confession, but they go to communion. And I was quite surprised. You know, when Rod died, they had the ceremony, like the Mass and everything there at St. Mary's University. And Bob and three or four other people that I know were Episcopalians, they went up to receive communion. And Sister Anne was a great friend of Rod's, and well, he looked at her to be like a mama. Mm-hmm. And she would come out here all the time when they'd have parties. You know, he'd have school kids out here. Well, she'd come out as a chaperone for the girls, and she looked up and she looked at Bob so funny, and he kind of bowed to her and grinned.
Well,
but a Catholic priest is not allowed to refuse anybody communion. If they request Holy Communion, he has to give it to them.
Were you allowed to go into a church of another religion as a Catholic?
No.
What do you think the reason for this was?
I don't know, but when they had the Lutheran Christmas tree on Christmas Eve, we'd always go over there. We went in there. And lots of times, you know, like some of the ladies would, like Mrs. Foose and Mrs. Walter Crawley, she'd fix little tiny things, you know, and we'd always get a little package over there.
This was at the Lutheran church.
Mm-hmm. See, there wasn't any other church here. Mm-hmm. At that time. But the children went to school and they went to instruction just like we did. Mm-hmm. But then before they always had their communion day or whatever they call it.
Confirmation.
They had that in the summer, and then they would go 2 weeks to the instruction over there.
So as far as you can see, there wasn't really a lot of prejudice between the Catholics and the Lutherans.
No. Uh-uh.
What about if a Catholic girl married a Lutheran boy?
Well, as far as I know, it never happened around here.
So there was influence then from
yes,
the priests
in that respect.
Uh-huh.
And you see, the trouble of it is they have to sign a paper, an agreement, that any children would be brought up as Catholic. And lots of the Lutheran people didn't want to sign that. And then that was it. They just didn't get married.
What about let's just talk about All Souls and All Saints Day. What day? Which of the 2 days did you go to the cemetery?
On All Souls Day. On All Souls Day.
And what did you do when you got there?
They recited the rosary all the way up there. See, they didn't go in cars or things. They walked, and they were in groups. Like I said, the sodalities all had their groups. And they recited the rosary, and then up there, Father blessed the graves. We stood down along the fence there, and Father and the alcalots went around, and he blessed the graves, and then all of them followed to the head of the cemetery, to the top end, and then there he would kind of give a little discourse on the people that are buried there and the tradition of the burial and everything. And he would stress that Protestants were not buried on that ground because it was a consecrated ground. Now they have it different. The grave is consecrated, but the Protestant partner can be buried right next to it. But his grave is not consecrated.
So if there were a pair of, or a couple, let's say, and one was Catholic and one was Lutheran, up until a certain time, when they died, the Catholic would be buried on the Catholic cemetery and the Lutheran on the Lutheran. Mm-hmm. They could not be buried side
mm-hmm.
to side.
Mm-hmm. See, because the whole thing was consecrated ground over there. Now, I don't know how it was in other places, but that's the way it was here, and that was the reason for it.
Did you decorate the graves?
Yes. We always had flowers in the yard, and we took like roses and whatever was blooming and decorated our graves, but we didn't put banners and things like those on there.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of people had these big artificial flowers, you know, and the wind would blow and they'd flutter around, pieces of fly from here to Omaha. And it was, well, most of the time it was just kind of, and the Mexicans were not buried on the Catholic cemetery. The only ones that were buried there were the Castros. And of course, the original Mrs. Castro was buried there. But no one ever put any flowers on her grave or anything. I don't know why, but nobody ever did.
Why do you think the Mexicans couldn't be buried on that cemetery? Because Mexicans were traditionally Catholic.
Well, I think it was because, you know, for a long time the Mexicans just stayed on one side over there where I usually kneel. The reason I kneel there is because I put my head like this and the sound goes to the wall and bounces into my ear. And they stayed there, and it was later on. Now, when I went to school to this Virginia, they called her Virginia Castro. Her name was Virginia Herrera, and her sister Victoria, and the boy's name was Joe. And see, there were three orphan kids, and the Castros took them. The old couple, were their grandparents, and they came to school over there. But they never knelt with us. When they'd come into the church, they'd walk over there, but they'd go down the side aisle from the center and kneel by their grandparents or their aunts or whoever was there.
Tell me where all the Mexican people had to kneel in the St. Louis Church in Castroville.
Well, that was a whole lot later on, you know, when more Mexicans came in here. I think that was just started after the Second World War.
Where they integrated and knelt anywhere, is
uh-uh.
that?
No, ma'am. They knelt over here, like I say, over here on this side,
by
St. Joseph's
right
altar.
Side.
Uh-huh, by St. Joseph's altar. The little side benches. There weren't very many.
But they felt uncomfortable, or they knew their place was
yes.
to kneel.
And then too, you know, in their prayers, they add a lot of, like a few words of litany onto their Our Father. And then they have the habit of making the sign of the cross with the thumb, and then they kiss the thumb. Mm-hmm. And white people, you know, especially at Castroville, and they felt like they were out of place. And it's just, I guess it's the last 20 years that they integrate into other places. I know one time she has a sister named Marcella. I don't know what their name is. Anyway, she said, "How come you lean over there, the Mexicans? Why don't you kneel over here where the rest of the people kneel?" And I said, "Well, I don't know whether there's a Mexican there or not. I don't look to see who's next to me."
Well, I think I asked you this a while ago, but I don't know if we established an answer. You said that the cemetery, they were buried in a separate plaque. Well, they were Catholic.
They were Catholic, and the priest buried them, but they didn't want to be buried in the white cemetery.
Oh, they didn't?
They didn't. Uh-uh, they
it
didn't.
Wasn't that the...
No. It had nothing to do with religion. They had their own cemetery.
I see. I've always wondered about that.
And then something else, you know, the Mexicans, the relatives would go and dig the grave. Well, here, we had a grave digger,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't want that. The relatives would go and dig the grave, and the relatives would let the coffin down into the grave, and then they would cover it.
That was probably some of their tradition.
That was their tradition, yes.
I see.
And that was what it was. No, it wasn't prejudiced. Uh-uh.
Then on All Saints' Day, what was the difference in the ceremonies of the 2 days?
Well, Saints' Day was a celebration of the all the saints, you know, and they had the litany of the saints. I guess you've heard of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one about this long.
Right.
And I've got to tell you this.
All right, do.
My cousin, Adolf Christelis, and General Fried, I don't know what General's name was, but they called him General.
Are you speaking of Rosie Booble's dad, Joe?
Mm-mm.
No?
No, it was her uncle.
Oh, all right.
They call him General.
Mm-hmm.
And he and my cousin, Adolf Christelis, had these two girlfriends, and whenever they'd go down there on Saturday night, they couldn't leave until they prayed the rosary. So the old lady had a real coarse voice. She gave the German prayer book to Adolf. Well, Adolf had no idea what it was, but he knew that it was a litany of the saints, and so he remembered, you know, ones that he knew, and he'd say that, you know. And he got to one. He was all right with Bartholomew. He was just fine with there in Matthew too. But he got to one he didn't have any idea. He says, "Heilige heist wir will." This old lady had Petrus. And General all but rolled on the floor.
Now, what did they say, and what was he trying to say?
He was trying to say the saint's name, but he said, "Be your name what it is."
Oh, be your name what it is.
And she didn't hear it. You know, she was so busy saying, "Big fruits." And that Bitfruns, that's pray for us.
Bitfruns, okay. Bitfruns means pray for us.
Yes.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, that's where my children had so much trouble, you know, in going to school, going to parochial, going to the ceremonies, because they learned their prayers in English. And the poor little hands, they'd listen, and then they'd say, "Bitfruns, Bitfruns." Well, they got going real good, and all of a sudden they turned into something else, and they had to wait until they could get the tone again.
It was like a chant, wasn't
it? Yes, it was. Oh, Lord.
St. Nicholas Day, how was that celebrated in your home?
It was the hanging of the stocking in the evening. That was all it consisted of. And, of course, the boys would play tricks on us. They'd get our stockings and fill them full of rocks and put coals in them and all kinds of switches. And oh, but when the sun went down, our stockings were up. And then, of course, the next morning we'd all jump up and go empty our stockings, usually on Mama's bed.
Do you think that is a custom that might have come from...
It came else? From the old country. It came from the old country, yeah.
Wonderful.
And then, too, you know, they used to... People would dress up. Some men would dress up, you know, like St. Nicholas. And they'd have switches and stuff, and you know, they'd come by the house to see whether the kids were good, and they said, well, that was the forerunner of Christmas, you know. They had to come by so that Santa Claus would know which ones were good and which ones were bad.
Oh, I see. So it was probably in honor of St. Nicholas.
St. Nicholas. You know, St. Nicholas was a saint. He gave all of his kingdom. You know, he was rich man, and he gave everything to the poor, made gifts of it, you know, to the poor, and that's where he was elected to proclaim the friend of the poor.
So it was his giving that
that started
the tradition. What happened if you failed to make what they called your Easter duty? In other words, go to communion at least once a year and before the Easter season was over.
Mm-hmm.
What happened? Say you died and you hadn't done that.
Well, it was just after the season closed and you hadn't received it. But most of the time, see, in a place like this, while the priest was called in before the patient got to where he didn't know what it was all about, as quick as somebody was real sick, they called in the priest.
Well, suppose he didn't make it and you died without having had this blessing.
No, that was a desire. That was a desire of wanting to receive communion, because that would be the one thing they'd ask. Did this man or woman or child want to receive the sacrament? And of course, if the answer was yes, why?
Even that?
Uh-huh, yes. It was inner desire to go to communion. I know I had a patient was, he was a fallen away Catholic though, and Mary Cook sent me in to see about him, and I went in and I saw that he was failing real fast, and I said, what is it you want to say? And he said, "I'd like to see a priest. You know, I was a Catholic. I was raised a Catholic, but I married out of the church, and now it's too late. I said, no, it isn't too late. I said, I'll run in and call the priest. He'll be here in a few minutes. And so I told the priest, you know, over the phone what it was, what he was supposed to expect. And he got there about 5 minutes too late, but he did anoint him with the holy oils and he gave him the absolution in absentia, you know. But he was buried in the Catholic cemetery. And, ooh, his wife was really worked up about it. And then the priest explained to her, he said, the man wanted that. He wanted to die a Catholic.
Did you ever know of any instance when this actually happened to where a person was not buried on a Catholic cemetery because of not having done this?
Yes, my grandfather, my father's father, wasn't buried on the Catholic cemetery. He was a staunch church member. Well, in fact, two of his sisters were nuns, the Sister Mary Rose and then the other one, I don't know about her name, I think Scholastica or something like that. She died of typhoid fever in Fredericksburg. She was teaching up there and she died up there. But, and all of them were Catholic, but he and Mr. Falmer got into an argument about a priest and some nuns. And he said, a man like you hasn't got a right to live, and he got on his horse and went home. Well, Volmer thought that, see, all the Bodders are very hard, sharp-tempered people. Somebody said, watch it, he's going to kill you. He's going after his gun. And when Volmer got his gun and got on the horse and went down there and shot him as he was walking into the house, shot him in the back. And then they called the priest, you know, they knew he wasn't going to live. But he refused to forgive him. He says, no, I can't forgive him. Here I have my wife with a little baby and expecting a baby in 2 months. I can't forgive him. So he was buried. He was buried, well, the Lutheran cemetery, the little Lutheran cemetery there where the new one is now, mm-hmm. He was buried right outside that wall.